you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item number two on our agenda today is a citizens' comment period. I don't know if there's anybody here that wishes to address the committee directly. If not, we'll go ahead and call one more time, but otherwise we'll go ahead and close that. Let's go ahead and close the citizens' comment period, and then we'll move on to item number three, which is a continuation of our festivities, I think, from last evening. So I'll turn it back over to Peggy and Denise.
All right, so this afternoon we're going to be walking through some additional department budgets. We do have at your place from yesterday the page numbers for some of the budgets that we'll be talking about. The first item that was on here was health, and our health officer is going to be here, but she won't be here till about 5:15 or 5:30, so we are going to move that one to a little later in the topics. And we are going to start today with economic development.
And the health officer is bringing pictures.
Is she?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon, thank you.
My name is John Regetz, and I'm the new director for the Economic Development Department in the city. And my department is tasked with retaining and expanding Franklin's existing businesses and attracting new investment to accommodate new businesses as well as those businesses themselves. The department supports the efforts of the mayor, the city council, and other city departments in their business development roles. On the second page of our section in your packets, some of the measures that we're predicting, we're looking at $5.8 billion of equalized valuation at the beginning of 2023, and that reflects the same amount of increase as we had last year. And while we show a few less non-residential construction permits, the continued construction of those already permitted projects such as HSA, Saputo, the Rise and Wongard buildouts, and Ryan Meadows housing, all indicates that our projected increase of $80 million of new construction is achievable. And our meeting levels, of course, remain the same. And with the Common Council's policy on no social media pages, we don't have the requirement anymore to maintain or populate a Facebook page. But we will be initiating a more formal process of doing retention expansion visits with our existing businesses. And so we hope to do at least 40 of those this year, 40 of those visits. And the next two pages of your packet, or our section in your packet, our budget is basically the same, except for some minor reduction in staffing expenses and elimination of an association membership in relative meetings. The marketing services contract, one of the contracts that we have, is concluding, and so we have a $10,000 reduction in that line item, and that's line 5440. And also there is an increase of $5,000 for the business appreciation celebration, which recognizes our contributions of existing Franklin businesses. And by the way, that's being conducted the 20th of this month at the Tuckaway Country Club from 5 to 7:30. If anybody here is interested in attending and hasn't signed up yet, please contact me. And pardon?
When is that?
October 20th from 5 to 7:30 p.m. at the Tuckaway Country Club. So that line that you see, that increase for next year, is reflected in 5734.
And may I ask why such a significant increase over the department requested budget?
That was my change.
They can't hear you.
Is this live?
Yep.
Committee in the record, Mayor Steve Olson. That change was mine. It reflects my desire to have the business appreciation dinner event actually be a thank you for the businesses and the interest in the business community by developers, not a sponsored and chargeable event. I wanted it truly to be a thank you, and you don't thank people by asking them to pay for their dinner or their refreshments, other than cocktails, because I know Joe's coming. So in the past, economic development has gone out and solicited sponsorships. I don't feel that's appropriate for a thank you event. They asked people to pay for admission. I don't think that's appropriate for a business appreciation event. That's why the shift in the dollars from marketing to the event.
All right, any other questions committee members may have? Hearing none. Thank you very much.
So we are going to move forward with the group from DPW. Glenn, I'll let you decide how you want to, what order you'd like to go in. But we're going to cover engineering, public works, highway, parks, street lighting, sanitary sewer, and solid waste.
So I'm going to reintroduce myself. I think I've met everybody, but just for the record, my name is Glenn Morrow. I wear three hats here. I'm the city engineer, public works director, and utility manager. With me, I've got Tyler Beinlich. You may not have met Tyler yet. He's been here just over a year now, right?
Yeah.
Just over a year. He's our assistant city engineer. And then in decreasing seniority, Kevin Schleter has been public or be street superintendent for 3 years now?
Five.
Going on 5 years. And then Mike has been the utility superintendent for much longer than I've been here. I've been here 8 years. So
11 years.
But he's been with the city for
44,
and Kevin's been here how long?
Going on 23.
So they're very familiar with where things are hidden in Franklin. So I, as would indicate by having all these folks up here, we cover several sections in your budget book. I'm going to try to go over it generally. I've got a few sections that I'd like to dig deeper on, but for the most part, I'm going to kind of skim over a lot of everything unless you have questions on everything. That's how we've done this in the past. As Mr. Regrets before me mentioned, Franklin is a growing community. There's a lot of things going on. I can tell you all of us are busy. Engineering department, where we handle folks coming in with new developments, whether it's single industry or a whole subdivision or accommodating DOT projects, county and state DOT projects around, we are extremely busy. Everyone's got a full plate downstairs. DPW, we've got an ever-increasing number of roads to take care of, an ever-increasing number of parks. And as infrastructure ages, it requires more and more maintenance every year, so those folks are extremely busy. Utility department, likewise, all new developments are bringing new utilities and new customers and so forth. So we're all extremely busy. I'll just lay that out there. Probably the biggest thing to point out in our budget is maybe DPW is probably the one to focus on. For the most part, the increase was, it wasn't much, a $60,000 increase, but it was primarily the personnel budget, wages and salaries and so forth. Most everything else in the budget, you'll notice that there was an increase in fuel cost, and then for the most part, if I could summarize, everything else is to kind of accommodate for the increase in fuel cost. So numbers were shifted around based on what we've had in the past and what we asked for. You'll notice that we asked for a lot more things than what were budgeted. We think that there are needs, but we appreciate the fact that there are budgets, and we acknowledge that. We just have an ever increasing. It's been many, many years since we've added DPW staff. We actually made a request for additional staff. We did not get that, and that's understandable. And it's just we got to figure out how to take some things off our plate, and we'll finish up our discussion with that scenario. So unless there are specific questions, anything, there is a couple things I'd like to maybe jump to, is maybe things that when you read the budget, we might want to change around a little bit. I guess I'll give you a chance to ask questions if there's anything specific that jumped out at you as you read through our budgets. Yes, sir. Mr. Hofer.
Questions, just for my illumination. How come we don't have any laborers?
So, you're talking about for the DPW? So we currently have an approved labor position. We do not have a labor. So just for everyone's history, we used to have seasonal help, summer help as you might call them, but seasonal is what they were officially in the packet. It was just getting more difficult to find people that would take a summer job and show up on time and, you know, enjoy working outdoors, especially when our pay scale was so much less than what they could earn, you know, going to work at Pick and Save or Quick Trip or whatever. So last year in our budget, we basically traded in all of our seasonal laborers in exchange for one labor position. So the thought was, instead of trying to find several folks for $12 an hour to work in the summertime, the idea is we would find one labor position for like $20 an hour. And so the question is, why don't we have labor right now? We've advertised, we haven't found one. We're interviewing tomorrow?
Next week.
Tuesday. Next week, next Tuesday. So we reopened it, looking for it again. It's $20 an hour, the wages now versus what wages were pre-COVID. Again, you can go to, you know, Target, Pick and Save, Quick Trip, and you know, make close to $20 an hour. Why would you want to work outside all year long and in the wintertime and so forth? So we are still actively looking for a labor position, but that position has yet gone unfilled. We have had pretty good luck replacing light equipment and heavy equipment operators. You know, those are the $27 to $30 ranges, in that range. We're still finding folks that are willing to, with the CDL license, are willing to come do that. So we've been able to fill some of those positions that have retirements that we've had to refill. But the labor position is meant to be someone, we don't care if they have a CDL license. We'd like them to just, you know, come in and work all year long. So maybe in the wintertime they might plow parking lots, but they couldn't go out and plow roads. But in the summertime they would be the ones out there doing the lion's share of the mowing and so forth. We didn't find any good candidates that we liked this past year when we were searching.
Do you think there's any instances where we have people at a much higher pay grade doing jobs that could be done by somebody that's more labor classification?
That's a good question. So one thing that you just, I don't think his microphone's on, by the way.
Sorry, the mics are manual again, so when you talk, they need to be hit.
Well, I did press the button.
I just didn't see its red light. So.
The red button should come on, Ed, as you press the one in the middle.
There you go. Okay, so the question was, is it possible that we're having people do things that you might be able to find somebody with less dollars per hour to do? And the obvious one that comes out is mowing. You know, and I hear, you know, so... several folks, including the mayor, and so the conversation is that, you know, we have, you know, someone's making $27 an hour with benefits that, you know, could be about $40 an hour or so to do that. So we did look a year or so ago, having KEI came in, and we had a conversation. So what would this look like if we were to actually, you know, farm this out to someone who could, you know, maybe mow our parks and we could, you know, spend time doing other things. Come to find out they're spending mid to high 20s on their labor to do the same thing. So what we would be doing is we'd basically be paying a contractor as much or more than what it's actually costing us to do. It would free us up to do some more things in the roads, which I think is important, but it would overall cost us more. So The question is, can we, you know, possibly, there's been some other communities like Muskegon. I talked to them about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And they've had some luck with some retired DPW persons that they just want to work a few hours each week, but they had the knowledge of their facilities and were able to supervise the seasonal help. They've had some good luck doing that. We had a conversation about all the folks that have retired recently in DPW. For a variety of reasons, either they moved away or just maybe wouldn't be the right fit to be that role. I'm not sure we could find that. We have talked about possibly, you know, we've had all kinds of conversations. How do you try to attract someone for that labor position? But that was the idea behind the labor position. We want someone a lesser dollar amount that's at, you know, doing the majority of the mowing and some of those other activities that right now we have operators doing.
And then it's kind of a hot spot with me at the moment after the chip and seal. But can you speak a little bit about the pretty drastic reduction in street miles crack sealed from 16 to currently? I mean, where we went from 30 miles to 12.
And which page are you on?
156. I mean, I'm assuming something else was filling that time. I'm just looking for a little background in that. Under activity measures.
Yeah, so you crack sealed. So back in 2016, we crack sealed 30 miles. And 21, we did 12 miles. And 22, we're projecting 20, but I don't know if that's probably going to happen. So we're still projecting
this year, we should.
And I'm getting a report to you in the past. We'll pass it out again here tonight, but we've actually talked about, you know, how much are we really getting done. So I think crack seal is the one that I always use as an example. You know, we're really only doing about a third of the crack seal that we'd like to be doing. You know, it's one of those good maintenance activity that we do, and we're just too busy doing other things that we can't get to be doing crack sealing. So, you know, why did we go from 30 down to, you know, 10 and 12, it's quite honestly just a time issue.
Prioritizing. Okay.
So, and it's tougher to prioritize, and I'll address that in a minute, too. So.
Prioritize and supply issues?
And supply issues is another thing, but that's it's been going down for the past few years for that, but primarily a manpower issue, and materials are going up, too. So.
The concern is down the road, it inflates it raises our cost because we have to do more maintenance because the little stuff doesn't get accomplished.
Exactly. No. So those who don't know, crack sealing basically keeps the water from coming up, or actually keeps the water from getting down in under the sub-basement. So when the sub-base gets saturated with water, that's what causes it to really break up in the wintertime. So it's just one of those things we get to if we can get to it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Other comments or questions?
In the future, do you foresee going back to the summer hire help, Franklin High School students or so forth?
So we did, again, we did trade our seasonal help in last year's budget for this, the 22 budget, we have a labor position. So we'd love to upgrade that to even a light equipment, because we do need some more equipment operators. But I don't perceive
like down the road. I'm talking like 2024. Are you pretty much done with that whole? I know it's worked good for other communities, but you know we're not like other communities. I know it's worked well for Greendale as an example.
Okay, I guess I could tell you we didn't have very good luck with it. You know, we generally found high school or college kids. Mm-hmm. Generally were the ones that responded to us. Sometimes they had a tough time showing up to work on time. Quite honestly, it was, our opinion, more babysitting effort. So it really made our equipment operators less effective because they were, you know, having to really supervise these kids, if you will, that were highly motivated to work. So We just didn't have good luck. Year after year after year, we just weren't. You know, you might find a kid here and there that was a bright spot, but the overall recruitment, it was not good.
Unfortunate. Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, go ahead.
It's a curiosity question. I'm new to the committee. So that position, the full-time labor position, is there opportunities to advance within that position to the next level? Is there a career ladder for it?
So ideally, this would be a position we find out, hey, we got this person, we like them. There's usually opportunities for advancement. So okay. If you didn't know, so that's another issue that's kind of hit us this past year. In February, they changed the rules on CDL licenses. So it used to be if you didn't have a CDL license, no big deal. You go down and get your learner's permit, and you work with our guys a little bit. Then you go take your test, you're good. Now you basically have, and it's a national thing, you have to go and you have to get a class. And depending on where you take it, it could be 6 weeks or even longer. Sometimes it's so when I checked around, there was either 4 weeks full-time or 8 weeks part-time, like everyday kind of thing. It's almost like sending somebody to the police academy. So you basically almost have to, you're paying somebody on the job to go get this certification. The cheapest place I think I heard was about $3,500, but they went all the way up to $8,000. I mean, it's just, I'm hoping over time we're going to figure out a way to get enough people trained to teach it. We've talked with other communities, City of Milwaukee even, about maybe sharing some resources so that when we do hire somebody without a CDL license, say labor position, we can send them, say, up to Milwaukee. He can train with their folks or maybe some other communities. And so it won't cost us a lot, but we may still have to work out a deal. So if we pay for your schooling, get your CDL license, maybe it's a year or 2 years. I'm not sure how long of a commitment we're going to ask for, but that's hit us hard, too, this past. Exactly. You take any one of our heavy equipment operators, and I guarantee they can find a job like that, paying $10 more an hour, going at any job site that they would wish to go to, and have to work a lot less. It's just the nature of the demand right now for what they're doing. I did a study a few years ago. When I started here 8 years ago, the median guy that we had at DPW was like 17 years, the median. And the young guy was Dale. He'd been here for 7 years. So he was the youngest guy we had, or I shouldn't say the youngest, but the least tenured guy we had. The medium tenure was 17. I haven't run that again for this year, but last year I ran it, we were like 3.5. The median's dropped from 17 to 3.5. We just had a lot of retirements, and I'm not gonna go into the stories here, but it seems like every day, or at least once or twice a week, Kevin and I have a conversation about the guys are just new. They make mistakes that the older guys didn't make, and they're not trying to do wrong. It's just they're still learning the job. And how many first-timers are we going to have this winter, possibly?
Depends if we fill the other two spots. We could have 7 or 8 that have never plowed before.
So basically, almost half of our equipment operators have never plowed snow. You're going to get a lot of phone calls. We're going to get a lot of phone calls. It's the nature of the construction industry right now, and just trying to keep people. We had some folks in stealing from other communities, and vice versa. It's a constant. It seems like once a month we have a conversation about this employee got a job offer to go back to whatever community they came from, and it's just one of those things, and we have to kind of sit down. What is it worth? Keeping this person, and it's just it's tough to keep people in that position, and I think Kevin's a great guy to work for, but it's the money talks.
Other questions for the group in front of us?
There are a few things I'd like to maybe move around on your budget. If you turn to page 262. You will see a chart there that talks about $1.5 million for the local road program, which is an increase from previously. Again, we do feel that that needs to be much higher, but 1.5 is what it is. The ADA curb ramps, these are, I'm going to say, a requirement of things we have to get done. So, you know, as we go through and repave a road, we are required to fix the curb ramps as we go along, or sidewalks if they don't meet ADA requirements. That's a mandate. So we'd like to add $50,000 for that. The balance would come out of the road program, because I mean, it's all done at the same time. Curb and gutter, likewise, we like to fix curb and gutters, especially on the areas that we're repaving, because you don't want to have to come back and fix the curb and gutter later at a later date. In addition, you do get those spots around town that just get really bad and need to be fixed, and we just got to have some money there. So, again, I would add that $50,000 back in.
Can I just make a comment, Chair? The mayor didn't cut all those things out. He just said basically $1.5 million for everything. They're all in the same account, so there's not a distinguishment between any of those.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Go a few down, and I guess if there is something that you look is maybe questionable, and maybe this is a discussion for Common Council, Mayor's Drive, there's a situation where there's two pipes that at one time we believe they were open ditches, and for whatever reason someone put like a 4-inch pipe in its place and it's not draining like it should. So we redid Mayor's Drive this past year. There was a discussion that maybe those two locations we were going in and actually the city take this on and take on an easement and actually put in a proper size pipe to allow the street to drain. Our estimates are that's about a $30,000 fix. So that's probably one of those things that, and maybe that's a Common Council decision, whether you want to do that project next year or not. That's in Alderman Nelson's district. I was thinking he was on the committee, but so I don't know if you want to have the discussion this year at Common Council, or you just want to wait till next year to have the discussion. But I would suggest to you that might be one that some could argue, why is the city spending money to do that when say didn't cause a problem. So, but other than that, that's I think everything else is we can live with. You will also notice in the capital budget, there's a lot of things we were asking for, replacement vehicles and so forth, that got zeroed out in DPW. That's being traded out, if you will, for a cold storage building. So to make room for a fire department at DPW, they would take up a couple of our storage buildings that we're using for storage, so we would use that money. So this is the year, if you will, we're not going to get much equipment, but we're going to try to replace that storage space, if you will.
We have a question down here.
Thank you. I do have a question as I'm looking at the capital improvement plan there. You know, and I understand for 2023 what you just explained about the cold storage building, but moving out for the next 5 years, it doesn't look like we are planning any equipment replacement. Is that correct?
No.
I don't find that. On the surface, I don't think that that's correct, but there is nothing planned for equipment replacement out of Fund 42.
So equipment replacement has time frames on it, so there's really very few items coming up for replacement in the next couple of years. That's not to say that there's not projects, not equipment that was asked for in 2020, 2021, et cetera, that would get moved forward. But honestly, we really didn't get good requests for the capital improvement plan. There's a lot of work to be done on the out years. So I think if we could defer those out years until spring when we have some time to do it, we basically just got replicates of last year's requests.
All right. I'm just worried that we might end up getting hit really hard in 1 year with a lot of needed replacements.
Well, a good portion of that should be coming out of equipment revolving, correct? correct?
Well, that's what she's referring to as equipment replacement, mm-hmm. but what I will tell you is equipment replacement has been grossly underfunded for many, many years. It doesn't have very much money in it, tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands. So what we need to do as a group is figure out how we're going to fund that. That may be extra street aid that we get that we're not expecting. Sometimes we're conservative on street aids, general transportation aids, and sometimes we're conservative on landfill siting, and that would be the very reason that we would want to load some of those extra dollars into the equipment replacement fund.
Well, we're going to have probably an in-depth discussion on that on Tuesday, but without, you know, kind of reiterating that, I think we'll cover that. But just on a brief note, we try and kind of have three pots, if you will, of equipment purchases. The capital improvement is typically for new items that the city doesn't currently own, new buildings, new improvements, new equipment. Then there's the equipment revolving fund, which kind of handles the normal and ordinary replacement of existing equipment. And a perfect example would be a snowplow truck. You buy it, use it for so many years, maintain it. At the end of its useful life, you turn around and replace it. It's really not an addition to the fleet. It's just the ongoing turnover of that equipment. And then there's another category, I believe, which is a small ticket kind of items.
Capital outlay
that kind of flows through on an annual basis. And for the committee members that are new, we'll talk about each of those a little bit more in depth on Tuesday's planning process. But the equipment revolving fund, I think each of the departments look at each one of their assets that qualify for that category, its dollar size, length of service, and they put a estimate on the replacement cost and the life of service of that. So a plow truck might be 20 years. If it gets in an accident at 18, that might be when it was replaced. If it's got lower miles, maybe you get an extra couple years out of it, or you know, whatever the case may be. So it's always a kind of a moving target, or a target that's adjusted year to year. But anyway, that has a separate fund and fund balance that needs resources to basically handle the replacement of those items. And as I said, we'll talk a little bit more about that on Tuesday.
The final thing I'd like to chat about, I just passed out a memo that I prepared in July of 2020. I know at least a couple new aldermen. I'm not sure, Hannah, if you were here at that mm-hmm. time, but you would just.
Mm-hmm.
What I did was I took 2017, 2018, and 2019 hours of DPW. They keep pretty good record of what they do every day. And we tried to look at how many hours they spent on all those various tasks, you know, snow and ice removal, road maintenance, and so forth. Long story short, we went through and we said, you know, how realistic or how well are we doing each individual thing. So, for example, crack sealing is one I always use. We're really only doing about a third of the crack sealing we'd really like to be doing. So you take the number of hours we did spend, you multiply it by three, that's how many ideally we should have. So I basically showed that we really needed 43 full-time employees and we got 23. So I don't realistically expect you to double my staff, and there's a lot of other expenses that come along with that, but bottom line is that we're asking our DPW especially do a lot more than what we're giving them resources to do. So how do you solve that? We talked about, you know, we can reduce our services. We talked about contracting out for services. We talked about increasing our staffing, referendum, and there's a new one that was a follow-up memorandum to this, was a transportation utility. We've somewhat tried contracting out for services. We found that we don't really save any money because it costs us as much. So like the example of mowing, we talked to KEI, we're going to spend an inordinate amount of money for KEI to come in and do it. That, quite honestly, we can do as cheap or cheaper. but it's not allowing us to really focus on the things that we need to get done, the roads. I tell people that, you know, us focusing on parks because that's where all the complaints come from, and ignoring the roads is like having a house with a leaky roof, and we're focused on trying to make sure the landscaping looks nice out front. Landscaping is wonderful. That's what everyone notices there. That's what everyone complains about. If we don't take care of the structural defects of our house and our roofing and so forth, it's going to cause more damage later on. We just feel like we're getting to the point where we just can't get to everything that we'd like to get to. So we do need to figure that out. And it means more appropriate discussion, but I wanted to start the discussion here and at least prepare you for it, because there's three aldermen on this. We'd like to figure out what can we do to help alleviate the situation where we get more time on the streets. So, again, contract out for service, I don't believe is appropriate, because we need to spend more money. And, you know, granted, that would allow us to focus, but we're going to come up with that more money. Increased staffing, having trouble just adding one or two staffing. Even though that would be helpful, that's really not going to solve the overall problem. The referendum and transportation utilities, I understand that a lot of folks might see that as another tax. Yeah, it is, but at least our opinion, of course, we're a little biased, that might be something. If you're going to raise taxes or raise the utility fee, you know, basically you charge everyone, in theory, based on how much they use the roads, and there's various ways that the state will allow you to do that. That might be something worth looking at. That's probably a discussion for a different day, but we would like to come back with that discussion someday. But the main thing I want to talk, or at least start talking about, is how do we reduce services. I can say this because there's three aldermen here, but all six aldermen call us on a regular basis. You know, there's this or that or whatever needs to get done. I just don't know how to prioritize it sometimes, and Kevin has a tough time with it. So when you look through this list of things that could be reduced, we do have a couple of options. On page 104, install new driveway culverts. I think we're going to come back to Common Council and say, in theory, people are paying, and they think that they're covering the cost of the culvert. I think we figured out, we tried to set the record right a couple years ago, but we were already behind, and we believe we're probably losing money on every culvert we install. If they're paying for it anyway, maybe let's allow them to hire their own contractor to go out and do that. So that'll free up our staff to go out and do road maintenance. That's probably something we'll approach Common Council about. Probably the other thing that could be touchy for the community is the recycling center. That could really save us money. We don't believe that there's a mandate that makes us keep a recycling center open. If we were to close it, there are other venues that people can dispose of whatever they need. Maybe not all the same place, but we do have the county landfill, we have the MSD hazardous waste site, and so forth. So right now we have an expense, not just labor position, or to labor to go out and do it, but, you know, open and close gates and so forth. But, you know, we do have to pay to dispose of the oil and the antifreeze and those kinds of things that actually cost us money to get rid of. So people would still have access to services, but I can tell you, when we just cut from 7 days down to 3 days a week, there's a lot of screaming. So we just have to be prepared for that, and we'd like Common Council to consider that.
What page are you on with that?
Page 3 or 4.
Oh, okay.
So
can I ask a question on that question?
Sure.
I've only lived in Franklin for a few years, so I haven't used a landfill. Are you charging for disposal of those of oil, or is that just a service?
That's a service. So we open the gate at 7 every morning, and we close it at 3.
Well, the hours are 8 to 3.
Because the fear is, if you do charge for it, they're just going to dump it in their trash can. Is that the thought process behind it?
We've just never charged.
Okay. Just curious.
Normally, in the past, we would make money on it, but times have changed over these last 2-3 years, and now they're charging us.
So when I lived in Oak Creek, they charged us for all appliances and stuff that we got rid of. We get charged for appliances here as well?
We don't accept any appliances. We direct people to a facility that takes them for free.
Okay.
I think there was another question, Glenn, if we can have Alderman Hyland.
Now I need to remember what my... And I don't want to... Did you have more points to make on this particular area, Glenn?
So I guess I just want to summarize the fact that we're going to have some conversations in this area. You know, we do help out other departments a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, we since I've written this memo, we picked up mowing for all the fire departments. You know, if we were to stop that, then their budgets would have to increase because they have to pay someone to mow. So, you know, we appreciate helping out the departments, but it's not helping us take care of the roof. You know what I'm saying?
The other question I had is going back to the capital improvement plan. I just want to be clear that we're replacing a complete play structure, $40,000 in 2023, and 2024, $160,000. Is that all Pleasant View?
No, if I'm not mistaken, no. This was just a general.
This was just, we were going to start replacing, like, Lion's Legend.
Okay.
We'll each year do a new one.
Okay.
Because they're getting to the end of their life and they need to be replaced.
And the budget we had is about what we think it takes to replace a complete structure. And then I think if I recall, the half was what was recommended.
The other one, the Kayla's Playground flooring. I know that's been a problem for at least a year, maybe even 2 years now, and we've moved that to 2024. Are we still comfortable? Are we comfortable with being able to make that happen and keep that patched?
Let me say we're not excited about it. I am looking at some other options, and I'm not so sure that Ms. Runty is very excited about the options. There's like, for example, we're looking at artificial turf that you can just cover it up, and some people think works well, some people think maybe not, so we're going to go maybe visit some locations, and mm-hmm. if we could find that would be a lot less expensive. Maybe we could talk about reallocating funds next year to do that if we can't get the flooring replaced. But otherwise, no, we'd like to replace it.
Alderman, that was my decision. As you can see, from the department request to the mayor's recommendation,
mm-hmm.
I'm not happy with it either, but being out there and walking the playground, I think it will last another year without big problems. That was my recommendation. I think it will last for another year. I'm not happy with it. But when we do that flooring replacement, I believe it's going to cost more than the budget amount.
Mm-hmm.
And given the amount of requests for capital projects and the amount of money available, something had to go that had a big number to it, and that was it. So that's the entire logic.
Okay.
I have a couple of questions. Okay, Ed, go ahead.
On your page two, under reduced services, your examples, mowing parks every other week. Milwaukee County, of course, they have slightly different layouts. They have areas that they went to not cutting, effectively reducing some of the usable space. Do we have any opportunities to shrink some of the areas that we mow to reduce time?
I'll let the superintendent comment on that, but I guess my first comment to that is seems like most of our parks are already super condensed and packed. I don't know if there's a lot of room for that. So
the only park that we have that is Pleasant View where we can do that, and we do that already. We only mow that certain sections of it twice a year.
Okay. And then regarding new homeowners installing culverts, how many on average do we put in a year? Because I would assume that most of our homes are coming in subdivisions and
that metric. So anywhere from 125, we're expecting more than 150. This is on page 150.
And if they did that, they would still be subject to inspection.
Yeah, so it might be a little bit more expensive for the homeowner because we would charge a permit just like somebody would a curb cut. It would get inspected by my technician that would go out and review it, make sure it was done correctly. We would still go out, we would stake the inverse, we would tell them what size of pipe they had to use and X, Y, and Z, all the requirements, and then we would inspect it to make sure it was done correctly, because if it's not put in correctly, you know, it causes backups for all the neighbors. So that
it's just the homeowner has to put the approach in, and that has to be to your specs, and
yes.
I don't think that doing the culvert would be necessarily unreasonable to pass that along as well.
And the intent, when we changed the rates a few years ago, the intent was is it was supposed to cover our cost, and the cost of materials just went up a lot higher than we haven't updated our cost in a couple of years.
If I could just say, if you're looking at the wrong line, it's about, usually it's about 20 culverts new for actual new development home. The other ones we do are for road replacement.
Oh.
So those we do, okay. Just because it's a road replacement, and it's, we decided that that culvert needs to be changed out. But for new homes going up, it's roughly in a 20 mark.
Yeah, because if you've decided something needs to be repaired or replaced, I hate to put that on a homeowner,
right.
But if it's something new and they have to put an approach in anyway, I would agree to do that. When I moved in, the city had contractors installing the street trees. I don't know when that changed or what the reasoning for that was.
We were having too many issues with the contractors. It got to the point they would use any tree they could find, and we wanted specific types of trees put in, and the cost for them to do it was just so much more, so we decided to do it ourselves. And we just wanted a better product at the end.
Well, we could.
So we hand pick out the trees and everything.
We could specify the type of trees and.
A type of trees, but then we have to put someone out there to watch over them that they do it because it's in the right way. And we just found there were so many issues with the contractor, the developers doing it, that we just took it over. And we charge them for the tree, and we charge them extra for our time and a little bit for a warranty type thing for replacement in the future.
And then watering and.
And we put the water bags on them, yeah.
So, but in some years, you're doing about 100 trees a year, is that correct?
For development, yeah. Usually it's about 100 a quarter, 150 for new development.
It would seem that would be a fair amount of time to at least consider.
Yeah.
If you look on page 150, glad Kevin's here. Yeah, I was reading off the wrong line. So.
What's that?
I'm glad Kevin was here. I was reading off the wrong line. If you look on page 150, driveway approach permits, that's 150. Culvert permits are 25. So
it varies every year.
Yeah.
Because it's mostly for out in the country, Oakwood and
right.
Roads where it's open ditch.
So like a new subdivision, say like Ryan Meadows, they're all curb and gutters. So this doesn't apply there.
Mr. Mayor, do you have a comment?
I do. Specifically on culvert replacements, not new or highway culverts. That gets into a taxation policy question as to should the taxpayers of the city pay labor to replace somebody's culvert that
the taxpayers of the city don't have the use of. So I would encourage this committee to start the conversation to do as the superintendent suggests. Let's charge them an inspection fee that covers our cost to inspect and to provide the specifications, but the homeowner is responsible for it. Because it's not really, if you look at the big picture, it's not fair for the rest of the community to pay for their culvert.
Thank you. I think we have another question here. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, two quick questions for you. One, maybe it's more of a comment versus question. I don't understand why the city should pay for anybody's new culvert to begin with. We're not paying for their new driveway, so if there's a way to answer that.
So we do charge for it. So
okay.
So we have a culvert permit,
okay.
And we charge them based on what we thought it was going to cost us to put it in.
Okay.
And they were supposed to pay that fee. The price of materials just has gone up a lot in the past couple.
All right, and I would also echo the mayor's comment on replacement as well. You know, if something goes out in my home, I pay for it myself. What's the purpose behind the city paying for a culvert replacement?
So let's suppose you have a culvert in your front yard,
yeah.
And, you know, let's say it collapses.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you can drive over your driveway, maybe you don't care. So we have to get you to fix that. Meanwhile, if you can't fix it or don't want to fix it, it's causing drainage problems for our roadway and everything else draining down the side of the ditch. So
okay.
The ditch is a rural storm sewer, if you will. It's what we have. We maintain them other ways. We mow them. If the homeowner doesn't maintain them because it is in the right of way, if you
okay.
don't mow your grass, we will be by at least once, maybe twice a year to knock the weeds down. You know, we're not going to make it look like a golf course, but we do knock it down. But a culvert is one of those things that if it were to collapse and you didn't care and didn't want to replace it, what do we do?
Could you do the same thing that, I mean, when I was at Oak Creek, I mean, they'd slap a lien on your house if you didn't pay for it. So it's only just ideas. And, I like what you did here as well. My question to you is very thorough, and I'm just trying to better understand what would be your dream budget based on these hours and everything. Do you have a numerical proposal? Or?
We do not. Obviously, the intent was to show that we need twice as much staff as I have. And I realistically don't expect that. Every new man needs a new truck and that sort of thing. But I would, you know, if I could get four or five, that would be awesome. But that's probably dreaming pretty high also. So.
Well, I'm here for the long run in this committee as long as the mayor and everybody will keep me. So I'd love to meet with you one-on-one and maybe get some numbers ideas from you.
I guess the message I like to send to common council, we have to start taking things off our plate or reducing services or something to that effect. It generates a lot of complaints. So we don't mow the grass at a park. We don't pull the weeds at a baseball diamond. It just generates a lot of phone call complaints. And we try to hold it off best we can because we have more important things to work on, but that's just what we have to
understand.
So, yeah.
Another question. Go ahead.
Thanks. Kevin, you said something earlier that clicked in my head, and maybe I just never realized this, but did you say that we as a city plant the trees in the right-of-way in new subdivisions?
Yes.
They pay for it.
Yes.
Okay, that was my question. But can they not do that? Is that something that could be taken off the plate?
They used to do it. We were having too many issues with
the same issues that you had with the contractors?
Yep.
So as an example, we do charge $400 a tree.
Okay.
And what does the tree actually cost? Materials.
$175 to $200.
So let's say $200. So you got a little bit of labor. We do make a little bit, but we guarantee the health of the tree. So if it dies in a couple years or whenever, we trim them, we maintain them, we do all those other things that we normally do. So I don't say we make money, but we at least cover our costs.
It's kind of it's a wash in terms of financial costs, but it is still labor time.
That is true.
That's to me the greater thing. It's the opportunity cost because now we're not doing the road sealing and the other things that we need to do.
Yep. That's a good item for the consideration.
Just realized I didn't understand exactly how that worked, so thanks.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor, do you have a comment again?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to apologize for interrupting because I think this is all great discussion, but I need to add the higher level perspective on some of this. We have to keep in mind that the Department of Public Works and Engineering have a bifurcated responsibility in the city. Their first job is to take care of the needs of the city that relate to the physical attributes of the city. So when somebody calls and says, my street needs to be plowed, that's their job. So that and to my way of thinking, that's excellent customer service. There's another aspect of their job that is also customer service related, but is difficult for them as a department to manage. And that's the individual calls by the elected officials for one-off projects throughout the city. Those have a tendency to be the more disruptive to the schedule and more costly projects based on the fact that they're not scheduled. So this committee needs to keep that in mind as we go forward. And I have this conversation with the city engineer all the time. Got to quit taking extra projects. You got to get some off your plate before you put more back on because you're not getting done what the city needs done for the individual other projects that pop up. You know, it's good to do favors, but first of all, the favors got to be recognized, and it's got to be important to the rest of the city. So I just want the committee to keep that in mind as they go through. And same with the police department, you know. I got speeding on my street. Well, we got 167 miles of street, and every one of them's got a speeder on it, but they're off doing favors. So I just encourage the committee to keep that in mind.
All right, any other comments or questions here from the committee? Anything else, Glenn?
I think that covers.
Maybe just, streetlights and parks. There's a lot going on there. I think solid waste is something we don't have a contract for next year. This is our end of our contract year. We are working with the collection disposal company to work on a new contract that will likely be coming later in this budget process. So we don't have a recommended change or static rate for next year yet.
We do anticipate MMSD will be increasing their rates for sanitary sewer also. We do have some bigger projects, sanitary sewer, that we're finishing. So there's a big lift station right now that after this one, it's going to be a while before we have another big sanitary sewer project. Maybe I'm speaking too soon, but I don't see one in another couple of years anyway.
So, and that's something that finance reviews every year. So we do that usually in February so that for the first quarter billing, any adjustments on the MMSD and local sewer rate would occur.
Now, speaking of solid waste, we just had a pricing revision. Is that the right word? Maybe a term somewhere here in mid-22. Is that?
Mid-22, $5. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was because of we went to more often recycling, I think.
So, no, that had nothing to do with that. Was a few years ago that we went to that. The $5 increase was the contract we had with our collection disposal company was based on inflation, so it was simply a mathematical calculation. We're hoping in our new contract not to have it based on inflation. Some years that's really good, and years like this, we can't afford a 10% increase. We can't afford to pay our employees 10%, so how could we pay a collection
right.
company? So that's what we're talking about right now with them in negotiations.
Okay. Anything else for engineering specifically? We talked about it just briefly, but that you want to comment there. I think 149 for everybody that's following along at home in their booklets. Looks like staffing's pretty much the same. Thank you. The question is, has there been weekly recycling? I think originally it started off bi-weekly, and I think it's migrated to a weekly, but it was almost really at the request of the contractor, wasn't it, or hauler? I mean, just their timing or... I'm not sure how it came about, volume-driven or cost-driven.
So there was two things involved in that. One is the automated system, and then there was recycling. I think recycling was the desire of the community, and then the automated system was the desire of the contractor. They're facing the same issues we are, trying to find drivers who are willing to get out, and I don't want to say that they don't work. It's a lot less work just to sit in your cabin, do the remote control thing. So, plus, not only that, but it's a safety thing. Their insurance was trying to really force them to go all automatic because, when you have a guy jump out, back issues or other safety issues of concern. So, it's much safer just to keep the guy in the truck instead of helping out at every stop. So, that was his desire, and our desire was, or I say our desire, so that citizens provide comment to common council to do more often recycling.
All right, thank you much.
Thanks. So I was going to say a couple things. We have the health director is not going to be here for at least 15 minutes, but we do have IT here, so if the committee wouldn't mind, maybe we can take that, and then if the committee wanted to take a break after that, we could do that.
Sounds fine.
Plan commission is at 7, but I don't think that'll be a problem.
I'm James Matelski. I'm the director of IT. and I will try to not use a whole bunch of acronyms and terms if no one turns around and understands for it. I'd like to first talk about some of the capital items. That since the pandemic, we've had chip shortages, we've had nothing but supply chain problems in the entire area, and we have watched constantly escalating prices on equipment. Now, that's true across the board, along with other departments, but I have seen a computer that we used to turn around and buy for $547 suddenly now going for $1,200. I present to you two quotes right here in my hand. First quote was a revision from a quote that I had in 2021 for $98,000, and I had the vendor turn around and update the quote to show me what that price would be, the exact same equipment, the exact same parts, and what it would cost if I bought that equipment for 2023. $169,000. Went up from $98,000 to $169,000. Went to other vendors saying, this is ridiculous. We can't afford that. There's no way that we could see that much of a jump in the price, and I want you to work with Hewlett-Packard Enterprise to turn around and bring me a different quote, and let's see if we can get some of the air out of it. Here's a quote that was just approved Tuesday night by the Common Council, $59,000. There is a $110,000 difference between these two quotes.
Same equipment.
Same exact equipment list. I took this list and gave it to another vendor, had them completely rework it, and down comes the price. That's the world we've been kind of like living in now for the last 2 years on it. What's a legitimate price increase? What is not a legitimate price increase on it? And are we better off waiting and deferring some of the decisions on some of our purchases in the hopes, and mind you, that's a hope, that the price will actually go down and we might actually get a better price paying it tomorrow than turning around and purchasing today. As I walked in the door today, 4 o'clock this afternoon, AMD, one of the largest providers of microprocessor chips for computers, just did a fourth quarter revision quote of lowering their revenue expectations by $1 billion for quarter four of 2022. Needless to say, the entire thing about computer chips being out of supply and out of stock is now over. So we are now seeing markets finally, since the pandemic, beginning to come back and return a little bit to normal than what we've been seeing in the past. So one of our main decisions was buying 4 VMware servers, 4 HP servers for this year. We originally wanted it in 2021, but then eventually buy it in 2022, but the prices were too high at that time. Waited them out, kept on requoting with different vendors. Finally, we now turn around and got it at a decent price for it. So in our capital budget, item number 2, first is our unexpected hardware expense that we carry every year for unexpected projects that come along. We have $63,344 in hardware replacements for the servers. That is not needed as of this Tuesday. We got it at a decent price off of it. So I do not need the additional money for that particular quote. I do not know if that was reflected or not for the simple fact that it was just approved on Tuesday. The next line is VMware server warranty expense on servers that are not being purchased this year. We have some standalone servers and also for our 3-PAR SAN. Our 3-PAR SAN, storage area networks, a big box of network attached disks for it. We bought that originally in 2016. The vendor has given an end-of-life notice on it that they will no longer support that product as of August of 2026. as of August of 2024, that is your deadline on the last time we can turn around and expand it out anymore. You, after August of 2024, you will not be able to buy equipment or hardware for those three bar stands. Now, we know this in our five-year plan, so we've accounted for it, but we do know that before 2026, we're going to have to turn around and replace the stands. So we now do have an end-of-life notice on it. We also are expanding out our LTO tape drives. We do backups to tape. So we back up disk to disk and then disk to tape on it, which was very much appreciated by the FBI because that is fully air-gapped. It's off-network. You take a tape backup, you put it into the fireproof cabinet over at the fire department, and if you get ransomware and it corrupts everything on your entire network, I got a tape sitting right here. It'll take me a while to restore it, but I have a tape here that can turn around and restore all the equipment actually on the network for the servers on it. So we do take regular tape backups on it. It's old technology, but it works, and we're upgrading them over to a new tape standard that can accommodate the growth and the speed. My total amount that I'm estimating for next year was originally $142,000, now minus the $63,000, total would be $72,997 for that.
Jim, I know you're going to talk about some other things, and it's probably going to include the extended warranty on the PCs, but we did know this was kind of coming. The problem and the reason we didn't take it out of this budget is because we were supposed to replace computers. We do that on a regular basis. Right now, Jim just explained to you how expensive computers are. So we didn't take that out knowing that that could potentially be some extra funds that we could maybe save in 2023 in case if the prices come back down. But right now we do have things under extended warranty. But when you talked, you know, police didn't mention it, but some of their PC replacements got cut for that very reason. So keep in mind that's just maybe another use for those funds.
One thing we did look at, too, is we did a three-year replacement of all computers. And that was started 5 years ago. So the normal replacement cost of a desktop computer is 5 years for it. And we know some of them are coming due. And one thing that we'd like to do is defer a little bit. If we can turn around and just extend the warranty on the first year's round of replacements by 1 year to let the prices again come down and stabilize. Right now, a desktop computer is actually more expensive than a laptop. I know that doesn't make any sense, but that's kind of what COVID did. It used to be desktops were cheaper and laptops more expensive. Now it completely flipped that around. Now I'm waiting for the price of the desktop computer, hopefully I don't have to wait that long, to actually come down in price on it. So we were able to, in our budgeting process and looking at alternatives out there, asked Hewlett-Packard, can we take those devices that are coming off of warranty and extend them out one more year? Can we take that entire replacement cycle and push it back 1 year? And they said yes. And we estimate about be about $2,000 just to extend the warranty out on all the machines that are going to end their warranty next year. Now, there are going to be cases where we probably are like going to want to replace some computers because they're more important than others. But at least we don't have to do one-third of the entire refresh cycle this year at a time period when the computer prices are quite sky high at this juncture. So that's what was being referred to in there. So there is a $2,000 charge that we will be taking out for next year for those warranty replacements. We did also turn around. We had in our five-year plan of this year, 2023, replacing our Palo Alto firewalls. But because we're also looking at putting in a fiber optic WAN network throughout the entire city, which is a completely different capital fund where that's coming in, we're hoping to have at least phase one and phase two of that project done in 2023. Well, if we're turning around and changing the entire WAN network, we probably are also going to want to determine what we're going to do with our firewalls at that time. So it doesn't make any sense at this point to turn around and put in firewalls. Right now we have two firewalls at the City Hall, two at the Police Department, and then one at each of the four remote offices. We may decide we don't need the four firewalls at the remote offices. We may want to do some consolidation on some of the equipment. with our new architecture that we're putting in. So therefore, we're deferring that decision into 2024. So in 2024, our five-year plan has been slightly changed, where we'll be doing network switch replacements and firewall replacements in 2024. So that has also been pushed off at least one year for it. So, and we'll have to account to turning around that, yes, we'll probably be a little bit heavier for capital requests in 2024 because we have done some of the deferment of it. But from a technical perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense. You don't want to turn around and buy something now and then have the entire architecture suddenly change on you and then you have to modify it later. For the, is any questions on the capital at this point? Okay. For the operational budget, we are carrying forward on a plan that was put in 2020 of removing all of the HBS contractors. I'm pleased to say as of 2022, we no longer have any HBS contractors working for us. That the rate they were requesting for 2022 was quite high. They had a very large cost increase, so we decided to stop using HBS for their contractor, and then we went with Robert Half Technology. So we hired one person out of our two that we wanted as direct hires, Robert Booz, who's working right now over at the police department, and he is a full-time employee and has been throughout 2022. And then we're planning on doing a contract to hire in 2022 for the last position, Mary Steinhardt. And she's a Robert Half Technology employee, so she's a contractor today, and we're looking at potentially whether it be with her or another contractor, but we're looking at turning around and making that a permanent position in 2023 at this point. The exact timing of that isn't quite known at this point, but we do realize that it is going to be a considerable cost savings. Prior to us going with Robert Half Technology and then eventually hiring as contractor hires them becoming permit employees, we were spending $250,000 a year on HBS contractors. Needless to say, we're going to be spending a lot less than $250,000 with two employees plus benefits at this point. So our long-term spending has gone way down on employment. So they're doing some slight adjustments, let's say, because the money for the contractor for the police department has to be kept in the police department funds. And then they're making other adjustments for it. Peggy can speak to that if necessary, to turn around and have the money then become available to the IT department for the payment of the actual salaries. GIS, slight increase. Those are two contracting positions that we are maintaining. We are not going to be doing any form of hiring on that because the GIS contractors are very specific to that particular industry, and you just can't turn around and find alternative people for that specific job set. Equipment maintenance, that went up a little bit again for the simple fact that we are off. We are off our current maintenance plan with the Avaya phone system, which is soon to be replaced on that. So we are expecting a decrease in the Avaya phone system price from what we were paying this year, but we'd still had to pay the Avaya maintenance for this year. That is a project for next year, is the replacement of the Avaya phone system. And the firewalls, the prices are increasing because when we first bought the firewalls, the first 3 years of support and maintenance was put into capital. And then after they came off of 3 years, even though we were using it for 5 to 6 years, we're now paying that as an annual expense. So it's about $20,000 a year for the expense for the firewalls, soon to be replaced in 2024. Sundry contractors went down slightly. On that, not too many changes there. Office supplies and operating supplies, equipment supplies are pretty much the same. Data communication services has decreased quite a bit from a three-year term off of it because we are now, instead of using T1s for our old analog T1s for it, we're now on AT&T fiber for that with a flex reach, and that dramatically reduced data communication costs. That's also revoked in telephone. Conferences in schools, we use Pluralsight as an online education and training, which where you take basically online classes and courses through it. It's about $600 per person. And that allows them to turn around during their free time to turn around and keep up to date on all of the ongoing trends within IT. Any other questions on the operational expenses?
Jim, you might want to just tell them a little bit about some of those security initiatives you've been working on. I think they're really protective for the city and obviously going to impact the budget.
Yes. One of the big ones that we have just recently done was being the signing up with Rapid7. Rapid7 is a product that does event log shipping up to the cloud. This is a requirement by the FBI. This was just approved 2 weeks ago by the Common Council. It also does what they call managed device services and detection and response. And any incident that we actually have, they will see all in all these log files that are turning around and going up to the internet for it. You're actually having a team of security experts monitoring all of those log files, and it's looking for correlations. All right, am I seeing something being reported by the operating system? Am I seeing a log that was being generated by the antivirus? Am I seeing something actually coming in from the firewall? And the artificial intelligence is smart enough to turn around and take a look at the log files from multiple sources and put together a more comprehensive picture of what is actually going on. And if the security team from Rapid7 sees something that's going on, they will immediately issue a ticket, an incident on it, and then take remediative action for that particular security event with a guarantee that, if necessary, they will remove the computer from the network within 10 minutes of actually getting a detection off of there. There's going to be an agent installed on every single one of the computers that will allow them to turn around and not only manage that particular computer, but also, if necessary, turn around and remove it from the network to help protect us. That'll give us a lot of knowledge of what's going on with our network and where are our particular security events for it. It does bring us into compliance with CGIS as well for it. With that tool, they also gave us for free, which I thought was absolutely wonderful, their vulnerability management solution as well, that it will go out to all workstations and servers and laptops, and it'll look at all of their patches, and then it'll not only see if the patch exists, but if it's also been configured correctly off of it, because you're not only having, do you not have a patch on it, if you have something misconfigured, that also can create a security problem for you as well. And that vulnerability management now will turn around and generate a risk evaluation. And based upon how vulnerable it is and do they actually see that vulnerability out there in the field, it'll then give us a red flag and it'll tell us, all right, here are all the computers that we find that you have a problem with, and these are our recommendations and the priority of it that you should turn around and make these remediations. So between those two events, we had three large events that we really wanted to bring forward in 2022 because it was recognized by the Technology Commission that it was necessary based upon audits and based upon our own internal risk analysis on it. The first one was actually doing an internal penetration test, both internal and external. So we had Foresight from Chicago literally come in and attack our network and see where we were vulnerable from the outside. They also did the exact same thing from the inside and gave us two reports and a list of remediations of this is what we want you to turn around and do to turn around and harden your network. Then Rapid7 with the SAM with log shipping and the managed detection and response services. And then last but not least, the vulnerability and risk management. This wasn't being done before. This is how we are dramatically hardening our environment. This now becomes an onion layer of we have multiple levels of protection around our network that it's not going to make us invulnerable because no one is invulnerable, but it makes us less likely that if something turns around and happens, that it's going to happen without anyone being aware of it. Any questions on some of those initiatives? So that's
a digest.
huge, huge initiatives, and, yeah. And Jim really, we have a technology committee, they do a really good job, but this is all this guy.
We also keep a risk watch matrix as well, and it lists out from an IT perspective. You can do it beyond IT as well. What are our greatest risks to the organization? And we try at least every month or 2 months to go down through that list and look at, all right, what are our severity ones? What are our severity twos? What are our severity threes? And are we making any progress unplugging some of those areas that we know that we are actually vulnerable on? So I'm glad to say we're also making progress through the risk watch matrix as well.
Thank you for that update. Any other questions or comments from the group that I see up here? Technology continues to drive so many areas, and safety and security are obviously in the forefront given the world we live in, I guess, today, right? Excellent. Hearing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. The comments here is that we take a quick 5-minute break, maybe hit the restroom and whatnot, and then I think we'll continue on with health.
Did we survive?
Thank you. We'll go ahead and get restarted. We're going to have some dialogue and discussion about public health. So we'll turn it over to you. Thank you again for being here.
Yes. Thank you.
Lauren, have given them a list of where you are in the book so they have your... summary and then the dollars behind it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for having me. Excited to be here and talking about the health department today. Just a little bit of an update of where we are is that I'm excited to share that all of our positions in the health department are currently filled by staff. We've had a lot of transitions over the year. Just with our health officer leaving, me taking my new role from an internal position, and then just some shifting around. We hired a new drug-free community coordinator and a new full-time nurse who are already funded positions for 2022. So we have a really wonderful mix of veteran staff and then some new perspective in the department right now. For the 2023 budget year, I don't have too many changes to the budget as it currently stands in 22. But I have increased or asked for an increase in supplies and printing, mainly because in our 2022-2023 initiatives, where we're focusing a lot on the community health assessment, and out of that will come a community health improvement plan. So just a quick overview of that for those of you who don't know is we go out into the community, get a lot of feedback from community members, residents, different sectors all across of Franklin, and figure out where the health need exists. And then we're able to look at that and collectively work with partners and residents, citizens of Franklin, to make a positive change. And out of that, a lot of programs come or different meetings. So we'll use that supplies and printing for different community initiatives. Also, just one change is our ELC grant will be sunsetting, so we have an epidemiological and laboratory capacity grant that we knew was ending at the end of this month. That was a grant that came about because of COVID-19, so a lot of our initiatives of our contact tracers were funded through that. So we have been scaling back as appropriate based on our numbers and then where our staffing is, with case follow-up mainly. So that's what that was, and then a new award that we have received is a qualitative data grant, which at the time of writing this budget, we did know that we were getting it, but we have not received the official contract yet from the state. That most likely will hopefully come this month because the budget period technically started a couple months ago. So that will be about $12,500 to use again for those community health improvement plan initiatives in different community-centered events. But other than that, everything is anticipated to remain the same in the budget.
And Laura, maybe if you want to just, you have a lot of grant accounts, which maybe isn't as common in some of the other departments. So if you just kind of want to tell what those grants are about and how they get funded and sure. How they get used.
Sure. We do have a lot of different grants. So we have about 13 grants. Some of them are ones that occur annually that we can anticipate those dollars for future years, and those are more common ones from the state. So we have a tobacco grant, which we do tobacco initiatives of prevention for youth. We have one or two staff that mainly focus on that and do tobacco compliance checks and prevention work within the schools. So we partner with our district partners and get that information out. We have one larger one, Drug-Free Communities Grant. So we were luckily and happily applied for and were awarded the Drug-Free Community Grant for a second cycle last year. So we're working in our fifth year right now, and that's a 10-year grant. So we have a Drug-Free Community Coordinator who is solely funded out of that grant, and she does a lot of work all across Franklin to do prevention of opioids and alcohol misuse in youth. We also have other grants such as the Maternal Child Health Grant, so that funds things such as healthy mom and baby programs, healthy families, the Childhood Lead Prevention Grant, which is small dollars but helps us do lead investigations when needed if a child tests with high lead levels. Public health emergency preparedness is a huge thing we do in our department. So obviously the pandemic puts emergency preparedness really in the forefront of people's minds, but that's an ongoing effort that we do to ensure that if we face an emergency here in Franklin, whether it be a weather disaster or a disease that our community needs to face, we can work with proper partners and have the infrastructure in place to respond accordingly. We also do we do have some ARPA dollars, so American Rescue Plan, coronavirus, fiscal recovery dollars that we're using for response to COVID-19 as well, similar to the large dollars that the city gets. And then the Qual Data Grant, like I had mentioned, is another one that will be new to us. So that's a CDC grant passed through the state. And we'll have a couple staff that will be working on that. No staff time is funded out of it because of grant parameters, but we'll be able to fund programs and initiatives through it.
Just the one quick comment. Relative to COVID.
Opioid money?
Oh,
you really haven't been to
We're just talking about because of the opioid settlement, that Wisconsin got some dollars for that. That won't be specifically in what I'm talking about today, but we're working collectively as a city to figure out where it would be best appropriate to spend those. That also has tight parameters, so it's somewhat limiting, but through partnerships with citywide or different city departments and then our Drug-Free Communities Coalition, Volition Franklin, we're confident that we'll be able to spend those in a really appropriate way.
Okay. Just a quick comment on COVID-19 kind of costs and expenditures. I think I'm hearing from the federal government that some of those subsidies are going to be ending here, whether it's vaccines or whatever, as the calendar year expires. From a city standpoint, aside from the rescue plan dollars that are coming citywide, are we in a pretty good position in terms of what our outlay has been or response compared to the inflow, I guess, of funds?
We work regionally with regional partners, both in the private and public sector, to respond for COVID-19. So things have been constantly changing with both our funding and then the need of our community. So in regards to like testing, vaccination, a lot of our residents have been seeking that in locations other than their local health department, whether that be because of convenience or where they're living or their employers. But we are in a good spot in regards to what we're able to offer for our response. So we're constantly working those emergency preparedness plans, and then also really a huge emphasis on collaboration. So we work with both our own local healthcare systems, but then our region and state as well to know where things are, if surges are coming. We also partner to have a constant flow of data coming into us about where the state is and where our region is for the Southeast region of Wisconsin, and are confident in our abilities to keep up with that.
And then citywide, we have been doing very well. I think you know we have about $760,000 that we got in 2020, and we were able to do some things, both cleaning, supplies, all of those things, technology for meetings, computers for work at home, remote, different things like that. So we were able to spend a lot of that money that way, and then we have the ARPA funding. We actually went through a lost revenue calculation, so none of our ARPA funds are tied directly to the pandemic, which was a good thing, but very honestly, the formula was not that great. So I just, not that we can't use the money, right? We're going to put it to good use, and we're going to do what needs to happen with it, but certainly city budget-wise, we were not set back at all through that pandemic.
Any other comments or questions or information for health-related activities?
Lauren, I have a quick question. Do we offer the flu vaccine through the health department, or do we just direct them elsewhere?
We do. We had the Adult Health and Wellness Day today at the library, so individuals were able to pre-register for their flu vaccine. We had over 300 people anticipated to come. I believe that it was a higher number than that, and then also offered resources there. And now we'll have flu clinics for built throughout the month. Over 300.
Over 300 today? Great. I wish I could have attended.
I don't have final numbers, but that was what we were anticipating, which has been really well attended in many, many years. So we also have different resources available there that are focused on like more of our aging adults or senior citizens in Franklin, and it's just a really nice place that they can come for a one-stop shop of information.
Excellent. Thank you.
Anything else?
You'll have to excuse me. I have an important phone call. I have to take my mom's in.
Oh. Hearing none, thank you again so much, and congratulations again on your family edition.
Thanks so much, Lauren.
Are you back? I'm not. No, I'll be back the second week in November.
See you, Lauren. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your time off, and congratulations again to you on Thursday
night. All right. Now I think we drop down to some of the second half of the list here. These smaller groupings, looks like it starts with the mayoral budget on page 72, maybe?
I say correct.
Yep. I say that, no, I'm not even going to joke about that. Yes, we do have the mayor's budget. We prepare that for the mayor. Very stable budget. It changed by less than $10. We have a part-time mayor in position and salary. I can tell you we have a full-time mayor. He spends a lot of time here. He manages the city very well. So nothing really new in the mayor's budget at all, unless if you have any questions.
I don't see any. Let's move on to how do you want to take this? You want to take the alderman next?
Actually, we did alderman. The clerk is in charge of aldermen, so she kind of took care of that
she
one.
She did, okay.
But municipal court would be next on our list. That's the judge and his staff over at the municipal court building. Not a whole lot of changes in that budget. On the expense side, I will tell you that the revenues that we're going to talk about either on Tuesday or later tonight are down a bit. They have not rebounded from COVID. Our courts did a really good job and were pretty quick in COVID in trying to get things up, and they tried to do some mobile, then they tried to do a lot of social distancing and things, so they did get things back up and going, but our revenues are down somewhat, and we are reflecting that in the budget. So that's really the major change on the municipal court side. And we already did information services with Jim. So the next one is administration and HR. Basically, we have three employees. No notable changes there except for one. And it's kind of something that's been a common theme throughout the discussion is a classification and compensation update for 2023. We do have $50,000 in the budget for that. When we get down to the contingency, I can tell you about some of the funds we have for merit. But that is the big change in the admin and HR budget.
How are we positioned with the two major bargaining groups, police and fire, in terms of contract?
So fire, we have a deal that went from 21 through 2023. The fire chief referred to that a little bit last night. We had a big concession happening, which we got 117 shifts at straight time rather than overtime over the course of this contract, which was huge at $880 a shift. You can do the math on that. So we're in contract with them for 3 years. The police contract ran out at the end of 2021, and we are in bargaining as we speak. We just passed through mediation, and we started our first round of arbitration prep, I'm going to call it, on September 30th.
So that, you said, expired in 21?
At the end of 21, correct.
So we could have some exposure depending on the settlement for 22?
We could. We do have 22 raise increases in the budget, as well as built on those for 23. So budget-wise, we're trying not to put ourselves in a recovery position. But, yeah, it will depend on how that case comes. And very honestly, if it goes all the way through arbitration, it could take another year. South Milwaukee just did their arbitration hearings at the beginning of September for 2020. So that's the kind of time frame that works on.
Seems like there ought to be a more efficient way to do that.
There sure does.
Any other questions or comments from the group relative to admin / HR? Hearing, seeing none. Finance, it looks like, page 92.
The ever-exciting world of finance. So I'm happy to report that we are working our way through my transition. Like I've mentioned, I've been here 4 months, and I'm learning a ton and enjoying working with the group that we have. We do have one open position that I hope after the budget process to get going on to backfill. We had left an accountant position open to allow for some room in case there was some succession planning. You know, had I come in earlier and been able to be here at the same time as the departing treasurer, finance director, then we would have had the room in the budget to do that. So they left the accountant position open. But now that I'm here and I'm excited, I would like very much to get going on that. So that'll be my goal for hopefully in November. We'll bring that person on board. As far as changes in the budget, there's very little change. Personnel is, you know, just the normal increases for individuals. And then you see an increase from 2022 budget, but there was an adjustment made for that open position. There was basically, you know, some accommodation for that at the end of the budget cycle. So it's not truly an increase. There's no increase in FTEs. It's basically the normal 2% and then the market adjustment. And then from a expense standpoint, we just have built in under the other professional services line. Last year, they were going to look at either a timekeeping software, an electronic timekeeping software, or a personnel budgeting package. I don't anticipate we would be able to do both of those, but I would like to investigate them and perhaps choose one in 2022. So that, or in 2023. So that is the only sort of extra or unusual thing that's built into the budget. And then we also, I'm also responsible for the audit. And that's just Department 152 instead of 151. And they did a nice job before I came of putting it out for bid. And there's, you know, a little bit of a decrease in the audit costs. So overall, finances, very little change. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I know that we're looking at someone to manage some of our investment accounts, the OPEB and that sort of thing. Is that something that needs to be budgeted for, or does that just play as a cost out of the portfolio?
I think it will depend.
Both. It'll be the portfolio and the OPEB fund.
Right. So it wouldn't be in the finance department or
that,
the general
that,
fund?
That gets that. There we go. Okay, thanks.
Other questions from committee? I think the mayor has a comment.
Peggy's gone. Uh-oh. I just want to bring to the committee a couple of issues that I've been talking to Peggy about, a couple of goals that got in the back of my mind. Now's the time to start the conversation. I don't expect anything to happen with it. But I look at productivity. Peggy and I have conversations. But as I look at it, we don't have a formal purchasing policy, nor do we have a person who can manage that if we had it. So that's an item that I put on Peggy and Denise's plate with the accountant coming on. Denise has got specific responsibilities already set aside for that person. But at some point, this is a worker bee, and Peggy and I argue. I say we need a worker bee. She says, no, we need... I'm just bringing this up. We need to have better control over our purchasing. We need to have better control over management of our contracts. I look at what's happening in Milwaukee County. They have no clue of the contracts they have. None. We have a better handle on that, but we don't have a central repository and person in charge of contracts. I see a potential cost savings there in the future. So I just...
Not in dollars, but in our world, accuracy and turnover and...
Right, exactly. That's how I see it paid for. There's no way we can quantify that to our taxpayers. But so I just wanted to put it on the table, and hopefully you all, smarter people than me, will discuss it as we move forward, and that's what I want to say.
And so he's almost always right. And he's there's one thing I do have to clarify. We do have a purchasing policy, and the reason I'm saying this is because we are required to have a purchasing policy. 2 years ago when I came in here, we didn't have one. I had to write one because we can't get federal grants without having that. I had a police chief and a fire chief that told me that one of them couldn't apply for a grant and one of them couldn't spend a grant he applied for and received because we didn't have that policy. So it has to meet all federal 2 CFR standards. So we do have an official high-level meets the requirement policy. What the mayor's looking for is more the purchasing threshold and what is the process. And that is also something our auditors ask for on a regular basis. So that is definitely on our list. We have a stack this high of examples. We'll get it done.
We heard tonight from the IT department, 2 different quotes, same thing, but the quotes weren't done at the same time. If we had a policy and a procedure, and Jim does a great job, I'm not besmirching what he's done, he manages his money better than just about every other department, but if we had a policy and someone managing that, Jim wouldn't have had to worry about it, and we would have been timely on getting that done. So that's... I just want to raise the issue. That's it. So thank you very much.
Well, and it may become more sensitive if we need to continue looking at outsourcing certain activities and functions. We've heard that tonight from DPW about various items, quality of service, et cetera, et cetera. It's great to have contracts, but if there's no oversight or contract management of it, they can run wild pretty quickly. Any other comments from the group up here? If not, we'll continue to move on.
Where would that person fit in that organization structure?
Those kind of roles, I think, fit in finance. I just don't think there's a better fit for them in finance. Now, we do have AP people, and our AP person, Chris, she does a great job. She does some of the tasks, but maybe just a little bit higher level decision maker. Somebody who maybe has a little more influence on the department heads and different things to do some outreach and things like that. But I believe finance would be the appropriate spot for them.
That's definitely something that you've got to have.
I see this person as taking pressure off of these two.
Perhaps. Would the city attorney still be required then to review those contracts? So it wouldn't necessarily take any...
Likely, yes. You know, we, in this day and age, doing contracts without your attorney taking a look at them is not the wisest thing to do. So, but if we have somebody that can get them all in order, so I will tell you right now, we have a hard time with some of our departments. They do their best, but contracts aren't their thing, right? It's different focuses. So we deal with the same issues every time. Nobody can get the insurance right. Nobody can get... So if we had somebody that could actually perhaps guide that process a little bit more, I think it could help everybody be more effective and efficient.
All right.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I've now had my last free root beer barrel from Peggy Stock. She's cutting me off after this conversation.
Best mayor ever.
All right. What are we up to next?
Assessor,
page 99.
So our assessor has been a contract position for many years. We're just really not a big enough city to have an in-house assessor. We did have a change in 2022. Some of the struggles we were having just with our previous assessor, you know, nothing wrong or right with the old one and nothing wrong or right with the new one, but there's a statutory assessment cycle that needs to be hit. And when those cycles aren't hit, I think we talked about it here, particularly in the last couple of years when the growth was way too much in one year and then we had to pull it back in the next year on our tax levy. And the reason that happens and the reason we get those swings is because we're not hitting the statutory deadlines. Second Monday of May is the time that the Department of Revenue wants all of our assessment information. The reason they do is so that they can put the equalized values out in August. So what happens is a lot of these years recently, there's been huge swings after the equalized value comes out and before the assessment. Well, that just messes with your assessment ratio, and it really messes with your tax incremental financing district increment. So we let our new contractor that started in February has made a commitment to us that in year two they will be statutory, so that's next year. This year they start in February. The best time for an assessor to start is probably October, a few months before the end and a few months after the end of the year. That's when they do the bulk of their work. They were behind the eight ball this year, but they have a commitment to us at this point that they are going to have it be statutory next year. And like I said, that's going to help our growth numbers. That's going to help our budgeting. That's going to help stability, and it's going to help our TIF district. So that was probably one of the most important things. The other one was we just didn't have a backup available with our previous assessment firm. Assessing is, I don't want to say a dying breed, but it's getting smaller and smaller. The world is getting smaller and smaller in the assessor's field, and certain companies are taking over more and more of the work, and that's just what was happening with the other ones. So that's where we're sitting as of today. And again, that's not to say our new one is any better than our old one. Those were just two of our main decision points, and we continue to work. In fact, the mayor and I have a meeting with our assessor next week to talk about what happened during this process, what we can do better, how we can change it going forward. So the assessor's budget, but it did go down quite a bit from 2021 to 2022. So basically we were at, it's about 21,000 down. So the way this assessor works that we're working with now, it's kind of all-inclusive. We don't have a software program. They have an online program. First time ever, we have all of our assessment information citizen-facing, so any of you can go look at yours or somebody else's parcel at any given time. That's not something we've ever had before until we put out our tax bill. But then they also do it, all the supplies, materials, so we don't have any of those costs anymore. We just simply have the cost of them being here. Now, I will tell you, a lot of assessment firms do not like to staff the office, and that's going to be a struggle for us ongoing. In fact, we just had a conversation about how we might be able to fix or not fix it. The current firm is required to have somebody here. They committed to having an assessor here every day. My thought is I don't just want an assessor here. If I'm going to have an assessor here, I want someone who knows our stuff. So just a little back and forth that we're working on right now with them to make sure that's going to happen. But overall, because of all those changes, that's why the contract price is done. And the only reason that sundry contractors is in there, that 11,000, is the state does all of the manufacturing assessments. That's not a choice. They pick the ones that they do, and they do it, and then they bill us for it, and that's the fee that we pay each year. It goes up about $400 a year.
And how long is that contract for, Peggy?
I believe that is a 3-year contract with 2 1-year extension options.
Okay. Any other questions? Assessment. Hearing none, we'll move on to legal services.
Legal services. It's a contract service, but it's kind of like not a contract service because we've had the same contractor for so long. So we do a lot of our legal work through the city, through contracts, tax incremental financing, public works. A lot of that stuff goes through our attorney, but we do special services outside. For example, our attorney doesn't do any HR services. We hire that out. Just different things like that. So Really no change in this budget, same as it has been for a number of years. We've tightened the budget a little bit, but that's just because it was unspent for a number of years. So you'll see that over the years, the last couple of years, you know, we trimmed here and there, but it's not to cut any services, and it didn't cut their pay.
All right. Next is municipal buildings.
So we have a custodial staff and an operations supervisor that manage all of our, I'm going to say our main buildings, fire, police, library, and city hall. We have our operations maintenance supervisor spends the day at city hall and kind of goes out to the other buildings as necessary. We are now supplementing that with industrial roofing, who's handling a lot of our capital. We're going to be talking, I know we talked a little bit about it the other night, but we'll talk about it again on Tuesday. We're kind of going through a bit of a transition to see if it really makes sense to have custodians here, especially in the evening, versus hiring a contract firm to do those kind of things. That evaluation is ongoing, and the 2023 budget will allow for either way.
That seems to be a process that we've gone back and forth with or utilized both sides, I think, in the past. And
definitely, definitely. And it's hard to know what the answer is, right? Having somebody in-house is less expensive. But when you have somebody in-house and they have to unexpectedly retire for whatever reason, then all of a sudden you don't have somebody to do what you need to do. So we just felt like the backup. And as well, we're thinking just with the whole COVID age and things, cleaning has become more important. It necessarily wasn't quite as high level of a priority pre-COVID, and now it's very common for people to have questions and need things cleaner, and I think that might be where we might be able to hold a contractor to the fire a little bit more and keep that up.
The other issue, quite frankly, is this is the citizen's house, and we really ought to spend an appropriate amount of time making sure that it's well-kept, presentable, and clean, as Peggy said. To me, my hot button is, it's the same thing. Windows need to be washed. But our team, they can do it, but it's not what they do. So it takes them a long time. The floors, they do a great job polishing the floors. But what about the scuffs on the walls? That's not what they do, but they work at it. Maybe a professional company, Peggy just says, no, this week I want you to wash the windows and do that. So that's a kind of thing. You all, the folks that have been here for a while, you remember, we didn't have grass. We had dandelions.
Yep.
You get a mayor that thinks about that stuff, and I jumped up and down, and finally we have grass and not dandelions, which is...
We've done a lot. Just in the 2.5 years I've been here, we've done a lot to maintain our building and spruce things up a little bit. And we've actually gotten some really positive comments from the public on that, which, you know, sometimes goes one way and sometimes goes another way, but it's been very positive.
All right. There will be more discussion and dialogue on that. But anything else, benefit of the committee? Hearing not. Insurance, I believe.
Insurance is on page 109. Insurance is a tricky one. We currently today are with a company called LWMMI, League of Wisconsin's Mutual. They farm it out, so they're the policy keeper and the funding behind it, and then they use local agents to run it. So R&R Insurance out of Waukesha happens to be our agent. Through LWMMI. So some of the things we have cost control over, some of the things we don't. So we get some perks with LWMMI, you know, some legal defense and different things like that. But I will tell you, almost every line is going to go up next year, and it's going to go up pretty substantially. The numbers that I have in there are basically the quotes that we've received. Now we get final pricing in December, but they've given us a really good indication on this. The one good thing we have is our workers' comp experience mod went down. I think we're at 0.86 for next year, so you don't necessarily see it here because whatever gets charged in work comp is a debit, and then it's a credit write-out, and it goes on payroll for every department, but you will see that decreasing for each department. We were conservative. It was 412 in 2022. It's going down to 350. But honestly, if everything, knock on wood, stays okay, we're probably going to be down to closer to 300. So that is a benefit, and we just get small increments of savings throughout the budgets versus seeing it on any given line. So this increase from 127 up to 160 is all of the other things. We do, you'll see on the first line there, 5501, the incurred claims. We had some departments budgeting for deductibles are in their own budget. So instead of them budgeting for all of those self-insured portions, we have that going now through the insurance fund, which is where it should be. It's luckily not going to be spent here, but the budget is here. There, it's in Fund 100, just like all of those other funds, and it'll be an offset. Oh, and then we do use Chubb for, which is a different company, for the property.
Dennis, turn your mic on. Dennis, turn your mic on.
Thank you. Any other comments relative to the insurance costs? So again, we'll have final numbers as we get closer to budget adoption.
Yep.
And then on 110, I think we have some contingency numbers.
Yep. So this is an account you're very familiar with. We have, so the very first one is something, you know, we really haven't been budgeting for too much, but it's been happening more and more, and that's refunded, rescinded property taxes. In fact, the council is going to be dealing with another one coming up here at the next meeting. Tis the season. A lot of places are challenging their assessments, and then the council has to decide, you know, really in litigation how far to take it and how far to, you know, stand hold and hold on it. But we're seeing that, so the $20,000 that we put in I still think is pretty conservative, but it's just a reality. We were just absorbing it into our budget. Now we're identifying it. Under claims and, contributions and awards, those are just things that happen. Sometimes we'll have, you know, last year there was a open records legal suit that we had to deal with, and we had to pay $37,000 or something like that. So that's what that claims and awards are. We don't necessarily know what those are, but they do tend to come around quite often. There's no actual in the previous years because they were set in the attorney's budget. We're just trying to put them in the unclassified so it doesn't skew the attorney's budget. So that's why that's there. Then the next section is just some details on all of that. 199, which is also part of this budget, and I'm happy to answer any questions on both of these at the same time. This is what we call our contingency budget. The one before 198, we called that unclassified. We're probably going to be using that just a little bit more here at the city for things that aren't department specific. In this contingency fund, like always, we have a placeholder, that $2.5 million. Please don't be alarmed. That's not ever expected to be used. It's not funded. It needs a supermajority of the council to be used, but it's more of a placeholder for a program at the state that we're actually not qualified for right now, expenditure restraint, but should that come back into play, it's a good placeholder to have. We do anticipate an underspend on all of our general fund accounts of approximately $300,000. You'll see in past years, last year, but 390, we were higher. We're tightening the budget, so I think we need to tighten the anticipated underspend. The other part of that is the unrestricted contingency. This gets used sometimes. We want to be as frugal as we can, where we've really been trying to impress on the departments that anything that can and should be foreseen in the budget process should be, but there are some things. I remember last year we had to use them for salt, right? We had an unbelievable year, beginning of the year, so much snow. We had to go dip into our contingency. That's what that piece is there for. It's unrestricted, simple majority of the council to be able to use those funds. Then in the next section, under personal services, this is where we don't have a merit program yet. We know that council's direction is that we need a strong one. But we have some funds there for that, as well as other departmental adjustments that happen for whatever reason. And these two, 5111 and 5114, kind of work hand in hand. The severance payment one, it's another one just like the claims that I talked to you about. We have severance payments. They're not really severance. That's kind of a poor choice of words. But when people retire and they have accrued time off and different things where they get paid out, it gets charged to the department. But we don't know where that's going to happen. So rather than put it in every single department, we put it in our contingency, and then it'll just get charged in offset. So that's what that is all about. So that's really both of those budgets, and again, I'm happy to answer any questions on either of those.
Do we have any active claims that are being
made? More than we care to admit. We have 3 assessment claims right now. I was in mediation on one yesterday. I have another one next week and another one at the beginning of November. So 3 assessment claims going back to 2020. Well, we have the Strauss ones, but I don't really see that as being a monetary. I mean, that's certainly a process type one, but that's not as monetary based. We just settled one. So I think those 3 assessment ones are the only other ones that we have outstanding right now. And every year we get a heads up from our attorney and, you know, where are we at? And I can't think of any other ones. But those assessment ones, they're not going to go away. The Supreme Court is actually taking up the dark store theory right now. Lowe's versus Delavan is at the Supreme Court. It'll be interesting to see how it goes because it'll also affect some of this. Some of our assessment claims also have to do with some of our commercial businesses. Namely, hotels are popular ones to have assessment challenges, so we're working through those right now.
Are they significant dollars?
Sometimes. I mean, we hope that our assessments are strong enough that we're going to be able to sustain them. And sometimes they are strong enough, but you just know when you're in litigation, the cost of, you know, you have to weigh and balance that. And we do what we have to, but, you know, the mayor's theory is, you know, why should we say we're wrong if we're not wrong? And that's absolutely true. But in the end, when we're taxpayer stewards, we have to weigh those benefits and
what
risks.
What's the issue in hotels?
They just don't like the values. Very honestly, they're oftentimes it's so sometimes they don't want to do it on value per thousand. They don't want to go by the assessment manual and say, okay, here's a tier one comp, here's a tier two. They say, no, we think it should be based on square footage because we have facilities all over the country, and in other places they're based on square footage. So then all of a sudden we find ourselves in these square footage discussions, and it's like, wait a minute, that's not how we tax. So it's, you know, you pick the item, whether it's they want to use the dark store theory, they want to use a square foot, they don't want to use that comp because there's some reason they're different when they're really not. It's just there's so many options out there, but we're working through them. We're trying to work, and as we work with our attorneys through the league on them, we're also trying to work back with our assessors, right? Because we make the mistake once, but we can't make it again. So we're trying to make our assessments even stronger so that we don't have to continue on that path.
Just remind John specifically, use your microphones because this is people are going to watch or listen to this. So,
well, that industry, like everything else in COVID-related tourism, took a heavy cash flow hit, so
for sure
that's a big line item on their P&L. So if there's
and that's a big point of controversy is COVID, because the Department of Revenue never gave a specific instruction to take COVID into effect, right? Because in 2020, January 1st was already over by the time COVID hit, and then in 2021, we were kind of in between. You know, so that's a huge variable right now.
Go ahead, question here.
So, just so I can understand, refunding and taxes, what, describe that to me.
So there's 2 ways. When you get your assessment, you can challenge it, and you can go through the Board of Review, but the Board of Review might either not go with you, and then you might sue the city, or you might waive right into the courts. And so basically it's either an excessive set, an excessive assessment or excessive tax claim. Those are 2, one for the assessment, one for the taxes.
Contesting the valuation that's been established by the, quote, independent third party.
Exactly.
Other questions? Comments? I hear and see none. Well, thank you very much. We covered a lot again tonight. We are set for Tuesday as the schedule is listed. I hope that's okay for everybody. This 4 o'clock format. And I think as we preluded a little bit maybe yesterday, the Tuesday meeting will probably be a little bit more with some of the other funds, debt service, some of the wrap-up, start seeing kind of how these pieces all intersect and the ramifications of some of those line items that we've been discussing, departments have been talking about, et cetera.
And if there's anything, and like I said, this is not the last chance for the committee, so there may be something that comes up mid-October that we might bring back at the October meeting. So we'll keep the Finance Committee in the loop all the way till the Council considers the budget. But if for any of you individually, if you have anything specific that you'd want us to address or bring examples of or whatever, we're happy to take that before Tuesday and bring it back on Tuesday. Or if it happens to come up on Tuesday, we can do it at the next meeting. So please know that offer is open because I know it's a big book you have sitting in front of you.
Right. So if my comment or recommendation would be, you know, this necessarily isn't going to a document you read cover to cover, although you're more than welcome to do that. But if there are sections that you have specific interest in, you've heard something, you saw something, you go through the pages and say, geez, I don't understand why, you know, their health insurance is way off the, you know, whatever. Tuesday's the time to bring that up. And whether we, you know, drill down on it then or after the fact, we can do that as well. As we kind of wrap up this process and come to a recommendation for the Council, we want to kind of be able to pull all those loose ends together, I guess.
Absolutely.
Do you have a comment, Mr. Mayor? John's here now. He didn't get the benefit of my ramblings. When was that?
Yesterday.
You didn't get the benefit of that. So I want to take the advantage now. And again, thank the citizen members of this committee. You're here to provide very valuable service to your community, your neighbors. We need your perspective. We need your outside look at the budget. I encourage all of you, as I've encouraged Dennis for 52 years you've been sitting there, to make the decision and make the request. If you see something that you don't like, now's the time. And I take pride in the document that Peggy and Denise, with my help, put together. It's a good budget, I think, but it can be better. I'm sure there's a way it can be better. And I encourage you guys to make a change if you see a need for a change. Don't be bashful. And again, I appreciate your service. Thank you very much. Y'all are been too, but... They got voted to this job, so...
Any other comments? Otherwise, I think we can take a motion to adjourn, and we will reconvene again on Tuesday the 11th.
I'll move to adjourn. I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you again, everybody.
Thank you.
I think.